are live. Episode 29 of To the Unknown Pod. My name is Jordan Bush. I'm the executive director of TGFB Media. We exist to help Christians understand and use Bitcoin for the glory of God and the good of people everywhere. Today, I'm joined by the normal, usual cast and crew here, Jim McAndrew, Tim Fox, Oshawa Hawthorne. Go ahead and introduce yourselves.
I'm Tim Fox, executive director of the Magnolia Foundation, also a Presbyterian minister, helping with Magnolia, helping Orange build a church.
I'm Jim. I work with Tim at Magnolia as tech support. I also run a company called DroneLink.
Do you use the drones for your ministry?
Could.
That'd be cool. So I'm Oshawa Hawthorne. I'm the executive director and founder of Brilliance Labs. And I was on a long road trip and vacation for a month. So I'm happy to be back with you guys.
Yeah, we are happy to have you back, Osh. Today's episode is again going to be a little bit more of a somber one, probably the most somber one we've done up to this point. It's called The Death of Charlie Kirk and the Consequences of Subsidized Injustice. We're going to just, obviously there's so much that we could say that has been said. This episode was initially designed to just be about this latter half of the topic, the consequences of subsidized injustice. And we were going to talk about the stabbing that happened for this young Ukrainian lady in Charlotte. We had everything set up and ready to go. And then we're all horrified yesterday to hear the news about Charlie being shot and all the stuff that went with that. So we just wanted to take the opportunity to talk through some of the issues that maybe haven't been discussed as much. And so we'll see kind of where this leads. The first thing that I want us to discuss is something that we don't even have tweets for. It's meta in that way. Just basically the question that we all kind of were talking about was, should we even watch these videos? Obviously, in the case of the young Ukrainian woman, there's very just graphic video displaying her final moments and what that looked like. There were some people who watched them and were sharing them widely on social media and, you know, felt justified in doing so. And then there's plenty of other people who just said, I'm not going to watch that or I can't watch that. And so I want to just maybe start there. Is this something that Christians should consume? I'll leave the floor open to anybody who wants to kind of lead off the discussion. I guess maybe let's try to give the straw man or the steel man for both sides. So Vashi, if you want to do that, maybe we'll go that route.
Yeah. Well, I'll start just with the decision that I made. And I don't want to impose it on anyone else, but I'll give my thought process. So, like Twitter, I noticed after Elon Musk took over, I got an influx of like violent videos showing up in my feed. They changed something with the algorithm and they would feed you accounts you don't already follow so that you would find new content or whatever. And there would just be these like enraged porn kind of, hey, look, this person was beat up by this other person. Often it's racially charged. And I just stopped. I just started blocking and muting every single account that in my feed I got an unasked for just look at this video, be angry. And it took me about a week to just clean my feed to make sure that didn't happen. So this is a person, that's not what I'm going to X or Twitter for. I'm not interested in that. It's not good for my soul. It's not what I'm looking for. And so with these, the two videos, I didn't go looking for them. I did when I just was trying to figure out what happened with the Kirk video. I saw a long distance zoom in shot of the hit and he slumps over and there's like a spot of red in his neck. And for me, that was enough. I understood what happened. And then I had to process it. I don't feel like it does. I don't gain anything more watching a close-up video of that or this other video. And then even the other video, I you see the images on the train of the woman slumped over, and I saw that, but I didn't need to see that the moment of violence.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these platforms just have auto-playing videos when you scroll through your feed, right? So you do have to be really careful. I mean, Tim can weigh in on whether or not our consciences should be bound on something here. I'm intentionally trying to not see the videos. I intentionally didn't seek out like the beheading videos from decades past. I also intentionally have not ever watched any abortion content. I'm already pretty incensed by all of it, so I don't really need to get any more enraged. I feel like I'm as enraged as I can be. And I have a photographic memory, and that stuff just sticks with me. I think it sticks with anybody, but I can just, my mind can just replay it. So I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at, but I also have watched John Wick. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, it's like when I know it's movie and fake, it's just, there's a different quality to it in terms of just my mind. So I don't know. Tim, what do you think?
I think it may be one of these 1 Corinthians, all things are lawful, but not all things are beneficial. Is it necessarily wrong to watch it? No. But I think for a lot of people, it's not, at best, it's not helpful, and it's probably harmful. I did watch the Charlie Kirk close-up one. I regret watching it. I did not watch the Charlotte one. But yeah, I don't know. I think, I grew up playing very violent video games. Grand Theft Auto and all that stuff, and really enjoyed it. But as a dad now, I'm like, you know, I don't think this is probably a good idea, for especially for my kids. And there's some things that are not wise. You're not ready for it. There's a line somewhere in Corrie Ten Boom's book, The Hiding Place, where she's like riding a train, and I think she's starting to ask her dad about what's going on with the Jews and the Nazis in Amsterdam, or not Amsterdam, in wherever she was, Harlem, in the Netherlands. And her dad says, well, kind of like a suitcase on a train that is too big for you to lift up above you onto the rack. There's some things that you're not ready yet to carry. It's my job to carry them for you. So, yeah, I don't know. I think, is it necessarily wrong? Not necessarily, but I think we probably need to be careful about assuming like I'm someone that can handle this and I need to see it. And, I don't know. I have, maybe I'm being inconsistent. I've seen different things about this over the years. I'm generally more comfortable with seeing violence, especially in movies, than I am with sexual stuff. And I would feel more comfortable with my kids seeing violence in movies than sexual things. Like, I've never watched Game of Thrones, even though people really like it, because it's just like, I don't think this is a good idea. And it certainly wouldn't honor my wife, even if I can completely keep myself from ever lusting about it. Is that inconsistent? Maybe. A part of me thinks sexual stuff may be more potent and destructive than violent stuff, but the violent stuff is not nothing.
I mean, the sexual stuff is, in a lot of instances, like actually happening to the actors and actresses, versus not. So I think there could be some distinction there between like, is something actually happening versus not? But then also I feel like our society is just very much sanitized and sterilized, and there's no, I mean, 200 years ago, people would have seen dead bodies and things like that. And we don't have that anymore. And so there's something there that we are not as desensitized in a lot of ways, that a lot of people would have firsthand experienced and seen a lot of pretty horrific things. Not that that's like something that we should pine away for.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, I would separate, because I would kind of, I guess for this, both in real life and for the sake of this argument, I would kind of be on the other side of things where, again, what we don't want to do is try to bury ourselves in a hole and like get away from reality. Okay, so this is, and I'm not saying you guys are doing this, I'm saying this is one ditch you can fall into. It's just basically, we're going to plug our ears, we're going to run away from evil, we're never, you know, we don't want to know anything about it. And I'm sure there's people listening to this who that would be your pushback. It'd be like, something of like grow up guys, you know, like that would be like you're grown men, you know, the difference between Tim, the situation from Corey Ten Boom, you know, that you mentioned would be, yes, this is a father trying to keep his daughter from some of this stuff. That makes sense. And so, you know, the father is bearing this on behalf of his daughter. I do think there is an element to which that is a helpful framework to think about this of, we're not like this. This is, first of all, if your motivation for watching some of this stuff is to, you know, enrage yourself or just, I want to watch this over and over again, so it burns into my mind so that I'm, you know, I never forget this. I think there can be damage there. You know, I think, and it takes wisdom to know yourself and your own spirit and soul just to figure out like how helpful is this. I do think that's a very valuable concern. I will say, the beheading videos, if you guys are just kind of coming in cold, you're like, what in the world are they talking about? So it was one of the first examples of this I remember was, I was in high school when there were jihadist guys who were taking captive. They weren't necessarily Christians, but there were plenty of Christians who were beheaded. They would post videos of them beheading these Christians or just Americans. And I remember going back and forth about whether I should watch them. I was in high school and I ended up watching a couple of them and remember either immediately or very shortly thereafter thinking, as a Christian, just thinking, that's all that they can do to me. You know, like that's all they have. And then it's over and I'm with the Lord. And so I do think there, you could at least make the argument that due to the fact of, as Joshua mentioned, how desensitized we are from death, we don't think about death. We're able to sanitize, and we don't. A lot of people don't do open caskets. We'll never encounter death. We try to go our whole lives without encountering death. There can be something helpful on a limited basis, like in a situation like this, that I could see. You know, I could see the effect of having seen it to be being a, I would say, a healthy one. Not to say at all, this is something we should make a regular diet of, we should go seeking out regularly or anything like that. But I do think the argument is there, you know, that for that to be the case.
I think it's just what's tragic is if somebody that's intentionally not wanting to see it,
correct,
goes onto an auto playing video feed, yeah, right? Yeah. And then you get, yeah, served it.
Or, so, you know, or if your kid's looking over your shoulder when it happens, like something like that, I can definitely argue with. I mean, the other example that came to mind as we were talking about this before we got on the air was Emmett Till. Emmett Till was a young boy who is, you know, lynched, dragged behind a truck by some racist guys, and just just looks disgusting. He's just absolutely beaten to a pulp. And his mom chose to do an open casket, just basically, you know, was just to convey the idea of like, you're not going to get away from seeing what you did to me. In society more broadly, you're not going to get away from seeing the reality of what was going on. I think the part of the, what can happen is the, you know, again, I'm not saying this is a perfect comparison, but you have the Apostle Paul talks about, like, in 2 Corinthians, we don't want you to be unaware of the affliction that we suffered in Asia, right? He basically is saying, hey, ignorance actually can work against you. It can produce a lack of you know, fury or lack of caring that really ought to be there. And so I think that is something we ought to be aware of. And this is part of what motivated Emmett Till's mother, you know, was she's like, I want you to see the full range of the badness of this situation. Not as a regular diet, but because this was uniquely heinous, I want you to uniquely recognize how heinous this is so that you do something about it. And I think that would be something to keep in mind as well, is if you have, whether you've seen the videos or not, you know, what you're seeing or your lack of seeing ought to do, that's something you ought to consider, is what do I do now? To quote Francis Schaeffer, how should we then live? What do I do with what I've seen? Or what I've heard about. And so I think that's a broader lesson that we can discuss, and we ought to talk about, like, what should we do? What should be the response to this and what we've seen? Because there's the full gamut of responses, at least verbalized, if not acted out.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was just thinking this morning about the full sweep of Psalms that the Lord gives us emotionally. Yep. And I was at a retreat one time, and the guy was talking about how he was talking about the Psalms and kind of giving a bunch of talks on them. And he said, you know, a lot of kind of contemporary, especially evangelical Christians tend to fixate on the Psalms of joy. He said, there's three kinds of Psalms. He said, there's Psalms of joy, there's Psalms of anger, and there's Psalms of sadness. And interestingly, he said that people in his hip congregation in Brooklyn found the Psalms of joy to be phony and inauthentic and that kind of language in church. And they gravitated towards the Psalms of sadness and kind of angst and frustration and being burned on things. And so he was not saying, you know, one is better than the other, but saying that these are all important. And you know, Ash, you were just telling us before we started recording, you know, just the sadness you felt. Like, I've mostly just felt really sad. And I see people online, you know, mostly kind of really mad. And this certainly should evoke a lot of anger. But mostly I've felt very sad about it. And I'm encouraged to remember that God has given us a full sweep of worship language and prayers to go to him with, full of anger towards the wicked, and asking for God to judge them and punish them, but also with that, and oftentimes mixed up in it, are psalms of deep sadness over sin and evil and wickedness.
This is something we see Christ talking about. He's lamenting Israel and says, you know, Oh Israel, how like a mother chicken, I wanted to draw you near and you were unwilling. And so it is this mixture of sadness and anger that was going on that colored a lot of Jesus' interactions with the Pharisees. And I absolutely think that there is no excuse to try to be mealy-mouthed about the evil of what's going on, or to try to do third-wayism, whataboutism, to try to draw false equivalences between other things that have happened. I just think there's great danger and unbiblical. That's an unbiblical reflex. Somebody, I believe it was Joe Rigney, talked to me, evaluated someone, one of these kind of tweets that somebody sent and accused, basically said, this is what life is like. This is what it's like to live life under the progressive gaze. And I do think that there is a segment of Christendom that very much operates and thinks about how to respond with one group of people in mind, and very much to not appear, to try to appear a certain way to one group. And they're not so much worried about the other group. And there's interesting dynamics there between people who are more evangelist, who have more of an evangelistic bent, versus people who have more of a, I would say, an inward shaped in terms of like church focused bent. I think there's some of the dynamics that can manifest themselves in different ways.
I mean, one thing I would say is I do think you know, you see people kind of, I think sometimes pretty over the top in the last 24 hours, expressing outrage over Christians and Christian institutions kind of trying to do the like, well, this, but that, and it's kind of like all these other evil atrocities, and it happens on both sides. And I mean, like you said, I think they have a point. I don't think this is the time to kind of have to qualify it before, like, you know, our friend James Wood keeps tweeting about, you don't have to qualify that you didn't agree with everything he had to say to just grieve the wickedness of it. However, I have been thinking too about the way that I think social media in particular seems geared towards stoking anger more than anything else, more than joy and more than sadness. And that I am concerned, profoundly concerned about people getting whipped up into a kind of anger at other people, at the left, at their pastor, because he's not saying or doing or praying or preaching the right things, because, you know, the talking head or the tweeting head on Twitter told them, you know, and got them all riled up and angry. And I don't know. I was telling Jim earlier, there's a part of me that is getting kind of flashbacks of September 11th. I mean, today is September 11th, but of the September 11th when I was in high school, and then the Iraq-Afghanistan wars, you know, a few years later, of just this kind of total black and white, there's only one right way to think about this, and you're either with us or you're against us. I have been reading lately for some of our homeschool stuff on the run-up to World War I, and some of the stuff that was kind of used in the run-up to that to kind of whip everybody up into this fervor of, you know, those people are completely wicked and evil. There's only one way to think about this. It's just, that plus my own kind of early war on terror stuff as a young man who did get totally sucked into all of this and sucked into kind of the propaganda of it all, there is a part of me that is like, I do want to be a little bit careful about how we let people get kind of pushed into especially extreme things or kind of black and white things or apocalyptic things, if that makes any sense. Not to say that everything's the same or there's good and evil, you know, all over the place. Some ideologies are clearly much more wicked than others. But if you start to think that certain kind of person over there is by definition wicked and evil because of what they think or the ideas they have, you have become the communists of the 20th century who are executing people because they wear glasses and they are therefore professors who are killing everybody and destroying everybody, or the kulaks who, you know, their bellies are a little bit bigger and therefore they're wicked, they're killing everybody. So I don't know. I am outraged and I'm sad and I'm angry about what happened yesterday. But at the same time, I'm trying to keep an eye on my own heart and want to help other people not to get sucked into something really dark.
Exactly, because there is a very true reality of that. That there are people who have bad intentions who would love for certain responses to happen. I do think, even though that's the case, that shouldn't ultimately drive what we do or don't do, right? Like we should have higher things motivating what we do. And again, it does take wisdom to know the difference. One of the things that Pastor Doug Wilson talked about a lot in the last, after Trump was shot, and even in the lead up to that, he basically kept repeating, don't take the bait. Like, don't take the bait. Like, this is so easy to take the bait and then to justify, like, if there's certain people that respond a certain way, it can be used to justify certain types of responses, especially at that point. And again, by and large, incredibly, in a country of 380 million people, nobody took the bait. And so I think that, again, it's a similar type thing. Is he, and not to mention him all the time, but one of the things he does, he's got this, he does like react videos, what are commonly understood to be react videos. And in the intro, they always put up Doug reacts, and then they cross it out and they replace it with respond, like Doug responds. And I think it's just, it's a small grammatical difference, but it really is. It makes a lot of difference between, like, it's just, is the way that we're responding the way that we should respond? Is this the way that's actually going to produce the greatest outcome, you know, for the cause of Christ, for our own selves? I do think that it's something we do need to weigh, and think carefully about. We don't want to just fly off the handle and react without thinking through the consequences of our actions.
So I think that's all really helpful. And I tend to be the nuanced guy, and let's try to not let go of one thing while grabbing onto the other. But at the same time, I sense that this really is an Overton window shift. I sense that the safety of not committing politically and not picking sides, that like zone where you can do that is shrinking. The ice is melting around somehow. Like, oh, I'm not calling anything, or I'm somehow trying to either I'm actually on one side and I pretend to be neutral, or I'm genuinely trying to be neutral and I'm equivocating and doing all these things. I feel like the place to do that is rapidly diminishing. And I think both sides, and it's easy to say, oh, it's just the radicals on both sides, but I think it's just the normal faithful Christians that are self, like, kind of, they're self-described conservatives, are seeing that and calling that out as disingenuous. I think that's a good thing. I think it's really good that it's no longer easy to just to not connect our theology and our politics and just to say, well, I fall down here theologically. Yeah. And like, so like, you could say like, well, keep your religion private, right? It shouldn't belong in the public sphere. I think the church too often has said, yeah, you can be public about your theology, but keep your politics private. And Trump's assassination, where all of a sudden people were now bold of like, okay, forget it. I'm just going to be like open. And yes, I support Trump. And that shifted. You saw that in Silicon Valley with a lot of tech leaders. You saw it in different spheres among Christians. I feel like this is another step where it's like, okay, forget it. Like if he could like lose his life over these issues, I'm willing to come out of the closet and be a conservative in social media, in my circles, or from the pulpit. That's what I view, and I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, insofar as Christians are people who value truth, the way that many people have lived for way too long, like many Christians have lived, which is, again, you're always... See, one of the problems that we have is, and the temptations for all of us, is to make decisions by the lowest common denominator. So like we move from exceptions to the rules, and we can like be tempted to like deny rules because there are exceptions. And so it's like people feel bad. There's a lot of Christians who feel bad about saying, you know, the left is bad or something like the left is something like the left is worse than the right. And it's just like, I mean, you're getting this is, I completely agree with you. You're getting to the place where there are many ways in which you cannot even compare the two. Like you just can't in good faith. And I feel justified in saying that. I'll share this one article that was written by somebody who I frequently disagree with. His name is Samuel James, writes for, that's not it. Yeah, here it is. Yeah. He wrote a book called Digital Liturgies that talks about how technology is shaping us. He is somebody who is far more center left than that's even being charitable in my mind. But I mean, Christian, he frequent critic of Donald Trump, frequent critic of a lot of the discussions about nationalism. I'm trying to find this exact quote. Here he comes down and he says this right here. In this moment, I see myself and Charlie Kirk, not because our views were identical, but because I too sense the spiritual and social evil that Kirk gave his life trying to identify. And reader, I have to confess, I don't think that this kind of evil exists equally on both sides. And so this is, to risk being dad jokey here, like this is a turning point for Samuel James, at least in his public rhetoric. This is something, some place that he, and I think this, as you mentioned, this was representative for a lot of people. And I hope that his, do we want to call it courage to speak this way will breed more courage in people who've been, I would argue, cowards up to this point, and drawing force people who've Christians, who've Christian leaders, who've drawn false equivalency between different things. So again, I just was very encouraged to see this because, again, when you look at some of the things that are happening, like they're not happening equally. And it's simply lying to argue that these things are happening equally in equal numbers, or even anything close to equal numbers from people on both sides of the political spectrum. It's just not. It's just not. Now, again, we can talk about the reasons why and all this kind of stuff, but just the plain fact of this is not happening equally is something that Christians, by virtue of their ethic, that the command that Christ has given us to tell the truth, we can't just keep lying about this. Like it's not serving anybody.
Well, I think the issue in view here is inciting people to violence.
Correct. Correct. Yeah.
I mean, there's a bunch of issues, but it's inciting people to violence.
Yeah.
It happens all the time on the left.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it doesn't ever happen on the right, but it's not even close.
Yeah.
And so the question really boils down to here, how is the right going to respond? And if we respond by inciting to violence,
yep.
You know, but that's the problem, right? Like we're not going to fight violence with violence because we have morals.
Yeah, because so, we fear God,
how do we actually respond here? Like, how do we get the government to wield the power of the sword the way that they should?
Yeah, and this is something we've talked about a lot. Is it one of the tragedies and the injustices? One of the greatest, again, the injustice that's been subsidized is the government has taken on every responsibility except for the one that they were given to do. Right? They don't want to exercise the sword. They don't want it. They're, I mean, in the case of this guy, I mean, staggering. The guy who killed the young lady in who'd fled war-torn Ukraine. The guy who killed her in Charlotte. This guy had been arrested 14 times and was set free by somebody who wasn't even a judge. I don't know if you guys even have seen that, but this lady, it was a woman, and she was not even a judge. She didn't go to law school, didn't go to anything. She was just appointed by somebody in Charlotte to make judgments on whether or not people should go to jail, and she let this guy go. And so just the staggering level of injustice and obvious idiocy that led to something like that happening is something that I just think a lot of people are waking up to, and they're realizing these aren't bad people who are being attacked. This is just random acts of violence. You hear the guy in that case say, "I got the white girl," two times in the video. Charlie Kirk, renowned for literally peacefully showing up on campuses and debating people, literally using reason. And I think for a lot of people, my wife said this to me. She said, "This is the first time where I've felt like I was potentially somebody, like a stand-in for me, was being attacked." And my wife is like, she's not interested in politics, all this kind of stuff. And so for her to express feeling like that, it just was kind of, again, I do hope it is a turning point. I do hope this is, people are recognizing that this is unsustainable.
I want to be clear too. Like, I'm pretty disappointed right now with, you know, Trump's administration and the right and how they're handling the Epstein files.
Correct.
They are totally mishandling the power of the sword in that case.
Correct. Yep.
There's no justice.
Yep. And the fact that we don't know who, I mean, the other thing, the whole thing with how the shooting went down, where there's a shooting that happens, somebody immediately in the vicinity of the shooting claims that he was the shooter. And then they take him off. Then there's somebody else who, again, had guns. And then because of the confusion, because they thought they had the guy, the real guy gets away. Like, there's just a bunch of just really
weird.
I
still don't feel like I have any closure from Trump's assassination attempt.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, Trump is the president. Like, you would think he would want that looked into.
Yeah. I did think about that yesterday. I mean, it really is staggering. We still don't know. We still don't know what motivated the guy. I mean, his house, the Trump assassin guy, his house had been professionally scrubbed. Like, there's all kinds of things where you're just like, this just doesn't happen. Like, this is...
So, the point I'm trying to make is, I'm not just like going to blindly just say, oh, I'm following the government and the right.
Exactly.
It's the Trump administration. Yeah. I'm as horrified about that as I am about radical leftists, random people that are inciting people to violence on Twitter.
Yeah, and I think it's important to, you have to have a distinction between your political philosophy and your country and what it means to be patriotic or love your country or your kinsmen or your culture. And then the state and the actual government and the actual people in that government. And you need to be able to hold a strong biblical political philosophy and a public theology. And then you need to be able to say, and I can love my neighbors. I can be proud of my cultural or ethnic identity. And I can still agree and disagree with specific politicians, with a specific government and the decisions they're making, and have nuanced views of all these things. And obviously, like, social media and certainly the mainstream media doesn't promote any of those distinctions. I don't even need, like, nuance, like, let's all equivocate and trying to well, yeah, I like this, but don't like, let's actually just be unwavering with our biblical, like, political philosophy. I just heard, so on the All In Summit, I listen to those guys a lot. I aspire to be a more popular podcast than them. They keep saying they're the number one podcast, but we're going to work our way up. But they did the summit, right? And they had Tucker Carlson on just this last week. And they were talking about this question of Israel and the need to be able to say, hey, we can, like, you can have issue with the governmental decisions of the state of Israel and not be an anti-Semite and not be racist, right? So can you like love individuals and even love people as a group and still call out a specific nation state? You need to be able to.
Yeah. And this, I think one of the things that I, again, because this is ostensibly a Bitcoin podcast, one of the things that I would like to talk about is, again, just the subsidized injustice side of this. Like, so much of what's happened, this doesn't happen in a vacuum. This happens because, and people are content to do this because they're enabled to get away with it. I think that's the, when you see this guy's been, he's been arrested 14 times, nothing's happened, he keeps getting dumped out. What does he take from that? Well, people don't really care. And so what does that tell you? It tells you that people don't value justice. And so if you don't subsidize justice, then you're going to get, and you do subsidize injustice, you're going to get more of what you subsidize. And so this is again, totally predictable. We talk about on this podcast a lot, the relationship between sowing and reaping. Like, if you continue to sow seeds and everybody just goes, oh, I don't want to die on that hill, right? This is another thing we've talked about, is there's people who say, I don't want to die on that hill, because they actually have identified hills that they do want to die on. And there's other people who just, they say, I don't want to die on the hill, because they don't want to die on any hills. They love their lives, and they don't want to be inconvenienced or have their reputation inconvenienced. They don't want to become the guy or the girl who is associated with talking about politics. Like, that's costly, and people don't want to pay that cost. As a Christian, though, my pushback would be, and I fight this too, as somebody who's got, like, a podcast that's about Bitcoin, I like fight back and forth of, like, okay, where should I talk about biblical things? Where should I talk about, you know, particularly Bitcoin related things? And at the end of the day, you know, like, yeah, you're going to have to make decisions that aren't motivated by self-preservation. You know, like, we can't make just our decisions about based on, I just want to protect myself, I want to protect my reputation. At the end of the day, we have to have convictions that are just more rooted in, I want to honor God and, you know, align myself with reality by telling the truth and telling what I actually think about situations, in order to subsidize a world where other people feel strengthened and encouraged to do the same kind of thing.
Yeah. I also think it's incumbent upon us to not have this ideal of moving out to the cabin in the woods and becoming a yeoman farmer, and we're just going to raise all of our own stuff and we're going to check out of society. Yep. You know, it's like, we do need to assert ourselves.
Yes.
That doesn't mean it has to be violently.
Yes.
But we can assert ourselves economically and socially and religiously and, you know, in all these ways, right? Yep. To have influence on our culture. And we can't just expect daddy government to do everything for us.
Yep. Yeah. That's what you just described, Jim, is a more respectable form of cowardice, right? Like that, or at least it can be. Again, I'm not saying that anybody who moves outside of a city, like, Jesus fled from being killed multiple times. The apostles fled numerous times in the scriptures. And so we do want to have wisdom. We don't want to just be willy-nilly. And I'm not saying you're doing this, Jim. Like, we do want to, like, just identify there's a season for everything. And there are times to run away. There are times to stand and not run away. And so I think that takes wisdom as well, to figure out what to do. And so that requires, again, giving each other grace.
Even just being willing to put yourself out there on a podcast and have your name on it. You know, it's obviously we're not that popular and famous or whatever, but we're still out there in the public space and people know what we think, and there's a non-zero chance of risk because of what we're doing, as opposed to just going totally OPSEC'd up and anon everything and VPN all this and all that. It's just like, you have to make a choice. And at the end of the day, you can't influence people if you're anon.
Yep.
Yeah. So over the, going back a bit to the Charlie Kirk response, the just these videos, what's going on, the voices and the kind of the main Christian thinkers that I think have responded well have said, okay, Jesus calls us to forgive. He calls us to be angry and yet do not sin in our anger. But then they ask the question, but what are you going to do? Okay, now live it out. What? How are you living differently in a post Charlie Kirk assassination / martyrdom world? So one of the answers, I'll start with mine, and I'd love to hear you guys, or if people are in the chat or listening, I'd love to hear your guys' response. So Charlie talked about how he wanted to stop there from being a revolution, like the union falls apart because of disunity. And he said, we're going to help people to get back to church, get married, have kids, and invest in their communities. So that's like the theme that we just keep hammering on, right? We were just talking about the atomization of our culture and with Ryan on Tuesday. So have kids, invest in your family, be in your church, be present and connected, and build that that bit of the kingdom around you. Now, beyond that, I do want to step out more in public ways. I'm in Portland, Oregon. So the general kind of political view within the church is without a doubt center left, right? I mean, we're more center, more conservative than the main culture, but for sure we drink some of the water in this city. And so, yeah, I would like, now I'm not a pastor, so I don't have that same need to be sensitive there. And I think there's a good argument and discussion, and maybe if Tim is here next time, to talk about the role of the pastor in the pulpit in these topics. But yeah, I want to be more bold. I want to be more explicit about the immorality I see in the secular left and wokeism and all of that.
I mean, I agree. I'm not going to become less public and less vocal because of this. I'm going to become more public and more vocal.
Yeah, one of the things, I mean, Oshawa, one of the things that comes to mind is the quote, the C.S. Lewis quote that you quoted. You quoted at the Bitcoin for Everyone conference, which talked about, it's basically C.S. Lewis talking about, it's difficult for him to imagine people with a freeborn mind being able to live free if they don't have a certain level of economic independence. And Michael Foster shared a tweet today where the fourth point that he shared basically echoed those sentiments. And so I do think that this is something where it just reemphasizes the importance of something like Bitcoin. There's a lot of people for whom the reason why they have a hesitancy or the hesitance to speak up is because they're afraid of losing jobs, or they have a mortgage, they've got other kinds of debts. And if something were to happen to their job because they spoke up publicly or, you know, made any kind of political statement, they would be afraid of losing those things. And so I do think this is a good point, a good time to reflect on and do a good accounting, or, you know, just taking a look at your life and just, you know, or accounting of you personally, and then also an actual accounting of, you know, where do I have weaknesses that can be exploited that I could get rid of. And so if you have high amounts of debt, like, how can I get rid of these so I'm not so beholden, so I'm not tempting myself to be a coward and to be unfaithful? I think that's an honest question that people should ask themselves. And even if you're somebody who has a meaningful amount of Bitcoin and you really are content to accumulate debts because you're like, hey, I don't want to sell my Bitcoin. Like, I think it's something you should be willing to consider at the very as well. If you've got a lot of Bitcoin, then, you know, maybe you're not as vulnerable as some other people. But, you know, for some people, this might look like, again, with this audience, it's probably largely Bitcoiners. But, you know, if you're somebody who, you know, doesn't have Bitcoin, I think this is one reason that you should consider, and that Christians and churches more broadly should consider Bitcoin. You know, it's a money that's held up outside of the existing monetary system. And so you don't need to ask permission or worry about losing permission in the case of somebody like the Canadian truckers. I think that's an underappreciated attack surface. I don't think still, at least up to this point, many people take seriously that that's a real risk. And to even begin looking for alternatives that would include Bitcoin, I think it is something that more and more ministries and churches should take seriously, though. And hopefully we can play some small role in helping facilitate that conversation.
I mean, in the long run, Bitcoin may make you a target, though, as well.
Sure.
Especially getting in this early. So I do think you should care about OPSEC, but not to the point where you just have to completely check out of society and live in your bunker.
I do think one other takeaway from this is that we're going to die. Like, you're going to die. We don't know when it is. And, you know, and there is truth in, you know, like the needed truth and just the fact that, you know, this is why, like, this is, yes, Jesus knew it was this bad. Like, this is why he was willing to come and die. It was because things are this grave. People, I mean, just there are people who are committed to evil and injustice and they don't care about the cost. They're willing to pay the cost in somebody else's blood all day long. And so I do think that it is something that, if you're a Christian, you should think about that. And if you're not a Christian, I think I would encourage you to think about that as well. It's just, that's a reality. And this is a problem that part of the value proposition, to use monetary, to use economic terminology, part of the value proposition of Jesus is that he came to pay for sins, to be able to fix the world in, you know, authentic, sustainable ways, and to remove the fear of death. Charlie was somebody who embodied that. Yeah.
The mask really came off during COVID on that one.
Yeah.
That whole thing was preying upon people's fear of death and lack of assurance of salvation.
Yeah.
Even within the church, but obviously amongst non-Christians as well, you see people wearing masks by themselves in cars. At the end of the day, you really got to ask yourself, what are you really trusting in? And is everything that you're doing all about ensuring that you're alive tomorrow, or doing the right thing and serving the Lord? Again, I'm not saying you should go out and like just take unnecessary risks. And we're also all in different situations. We have wives and children, people that depend upon us, and we have to be prudent. But at the same time, we do have to be bold.
Yep.
Yeah. So what role does the local church have in this? I mean, there's different perspectives on how political you get and how much you talk about these hot button issues. What do you guys think?
I think there's even beyond, I would say even before you get to the level of the church, I think the you have to have a commitment to real unity, which is rooted in truth and actually being honest about who you are. And I think there's a lot of people, and again, we're all tempted to this. I'm tempted to this all the time. Like, you're tempted to foster this type of false unity, this fake unity that's really, we're not going to really talk about what we actually believe. We're going to kind of just, you know, just kind of keep things below the surface, just try to keep the peace and that kind of stuff. That's not real peace. Like, that's not real. It's not reality. That doesn't require any kind of courage on the part of the person telling it, or spiritual maturity on the part of the person who's hearing you say what you actually believe. That's just something I think churches, I guess, do have a responsibility to to foster environments where people can tell the truth about who they are, what they believe, and have, and like the reality of Christian love and Christian commitment to the kingdom of God manifesting itself in not just leaving a church because there's people there who don't think the way that you do about every issue. Some of the people who I respect the most, and who I respect the most, their faith and, or just their maturity at the very least, are people, there's people who I don't agree with on a lot of things, and yet I still love them. And again, we can have respectful disagreements. We can joke with each other about, you know, things that they believe that I disagree with, and they can joke with me about things. And I just think this requires a level of maturity that we think we possess, but many people do not possess.
I mean, I think that church should be absolutely the moral authority on this. They need to come out and condemn it. They should not ignore it. They should speak out against it and say it's absolutely heinous and wrong. And then they need to remind people that God is sovereign. And then they need to embolden people to go out there and fulfill the Great Commission in the face of evil.
That's good. So something that I learned as a pastor when I was planning a church, and then more recently here in Portland, is that if you avoid a topic that are on people's minds and a question they're trying to answer, and you don't answer it for them, they're going to go elsewhere to get their answers. And you see this in the whole manosphere type of thing, where churches is effeminate, and so they're going to go and they want to find dudes, and it's, they're going to end up finding bad influences online and radical influences that like connect with their urge for masculinity, but then it goes overboard and it objectifies women. Or here they have anger over this issue, but you as the pastor aren't talking about it, and so now they're gonna find some militia group or something, or like there's ways that people, like water will keep going, like osmosis, it's gonna go to the place that's lowest and that where there's a vacuum. And the church historically, I mean, the pastor was the most educated person in the town, and they went to the pastor for things. Now, certainly, I think some pastors go off and they try to be the expert in everything. And if you're not, don't act like the expert, but find the experts, come to conclusions and biblical educated opinions, and share them. If they should be open-handed issues, don't bind people's consciences to them. But don't be afraid of offending people. And sometimes you got to say things that are going to make people walk away and stop tithing to your church. And that being silent is actually going to, like, is going to cause more harm in the end. And it's also, I mean, like during COVID and BLM, right? The pendulum swing was, oh, here's some outrage. You have to say something. And silence is violence. So you don't want to fall into that. And at the same time, if you are silent, they're looking for something. So you don't need to posture politically and put the flag in the profile. Like, you don't need to buy into that while still not leaving a theological and political vacuum within your church.
Yeah, this, somebody, I can't remember who said this, it might have been Michael Foster, might have been somebody else, but authority flows to responsibility. Like, if authority flows to people who take responsibility. So, that, again, there's people who don't hold office in their towns, but who effectively do. They effectively have a ton of influence and you know, authority because they take responsibility. They, you know, they make themselves known, they care for people. And so this is something that at the various, and there's something called sphere sovereignty, which is something, if you don't know what that is, go look it up. But it's just basically like, you have, God has given you authority over certain, you know, in certain capacities depending on what stage of life you're in. And so you have authority in your home if you're a dad or a mom. If you have authority in your family if you're a brother or a sister. And so just taking responsibility and caring, caring for people in those ways, by you taking responsibility for things, you like authority will naturally flow to you. And so I think there's a lot of people who want, and the temptation is for guys to want to look for official authority and to look for, you know, to rely on position to give them authority rather than just basically going out and taking it, just going out and, you know, caring for people and then people coming to identify you as an authority in a certain realm. And so I think this is, there's a happy medium there, right? You don't want to be just trying to accumulate authority and then have nothing meaningful to say. You can lead people into, you know, you could look at somebody like, Andrew Tate or somebody like these guys. They have humongous followings, but are repeating and saying foolish things in many occasions. And so again, there's a happy medium there, but you don't just want to wait till you're perfect. There's a lot of people, unfortunately, there's a lot of people who should be more vocal and take more responsibility, and yet they are more naturally bent towards not saying anything. And then there's people who are more bent to say something and to want to be the guy up front or the girl up front. And they actually should be the ones who sit down more and are you know, willing to learn. It's the whole angels or fools rush in where angels fear to tread, that dynamic. And so I think that churches shouldn't be looking to close that circle. Churches shouldn't just be waiting and trying to encourage, especially men, to never say anything unless it's perfect. We talked about this before we got on, but Jesus called the sons of thunder and they were anything but finished products. Like they were anything but these, you know, these nice, polished, perfect people. They had all kinds of things. Jesus called his best friend Satan because this guy wanted to do something that wasn't in line with what God wanted him to do. Jesus, there were guys who wanted to call down fire from heaven because people didn't respond the way that they should have responded. And so I think that there's a lot of churches, especially in America, who put this pressure on guys to be perfect, polished, basically women with slightly more testosterone. And I just don't, I think that's another example. We get what we subsidize. We want men. We see the importance of courageous men in situations like this. And yet the question is, are we producing or are the actions and the cultures that we're creating, are they subsidizing and producing that type of man? And I think that there's a lot of parts of American Christendom where the answer is no. And so if that's the case, then we need to like reconsider, well, what are we missing? I think that would be wise to do. You guys have anything else to add? We're going to close the pod here.
I mean, I would just say that our culture seems to be allergic to grieving and being mournful, and mourning is totally a legitimate state of mind and heart to be in the Bible. Sometimes you sing a dirge and sometimes you don't. So I think it's totally appropriate to feel some sadness and some heaviness and to not shy away from that, especially it doesn't make you any less masculine to feel that way.
Yeah, this isn't the end. That would be the other thing. It would just be, it was a Brian Save song, I think it was Psalm 47 or something. I shared it yesterday. And it's a great message. Just, you know, don't fret for evil men. Fret not yourself for evil men. Like these things, this isn't the end. The Lord is working. You can trust him. And what that trust looks like is going to require different things. And so I think we should all be doing, again, more having some introspective moments here of like what should change, what needs to change, as Asha was talking about, in me and, you know, the things that I'm doing with my family, my church. I think the people should take seriously. This is one last final thing. I think that people need to take seriously the threats of violence and to be preparing themselves in any one of a number of different ways for that reality, both not just to protect yourself, but to be able to protect other people. I think that that's something that one thing that we should take from this. So again, lot more that we could say, but we are grateful for you. Again, if you have benefited from this, please like, subscribe, share with friends, leave reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Those are the two most meaningful places. Comment on Facebook. We're grateful for the people who've done that in the chat. And we will be back on Tuesday with another episode, Lord willing, of the To the Unknown Podcast.